This is Daily Politics. Here we look into the ins and outs of everything Kenyan politics. We pull no punches and have no reasons to sugarcoat anything that matters to Kenyans. My name is Roslyn Obala, political editor NTV, and I'm joined by...
My name is Patrick Langat, political editor Daily Nation. And the two gentlemen here today.
We're just alone. We'll hold brief,
but we shouldn't do it for so long because
yes. Oliver decided to ditch us.
Oliver has disappeared. Gushu claims he's in the
village,
listening to the people on the ground. We don't know how far.
You know, when the kitchen is too hot, you run away. Maybe he just didn't want to be today to buy some people.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. Today we are back again with this issue of Osonko. And yesterday you saw what happened. IBC has decided to revoke his nomination for the governor race for Mombasa. What do you think? Where does that leave Sonko? And in terms of enhancing Chapter 6, what is the consequences of the ruling by the Supreme Court last week?
I think Sonko's case is the classic poster boy of what Chapter 6 is to us as Kenyans. Whatever we do with Mike Sonko, this man who ran Nairobi and was impeached as a governor and now wants to run our second biggest city in Mombasa, whatever we do with Mike Sonko would be what is told years to come about our Chapter 6 and what it means on the Leadership Integrity Act and the whole chapter in the Constitution. Of course, the discussion before the Supreme Court ruled, after that High Court order that gave him that reprieve and he was a man with 9 lives, and he was already back to the ballot, was that Mike Sonko had gotten away with this technicality that the law says as long as you have an active appeal, you are allowed to run for office. So here he is, a few days later, the Supreme Court rules and says, wait a minute, you have been removed from office on Chapter 6 integrity grounds. You cannot run for office anymore. You were declared unfit to hold a public office. Mike Sonko has not taken that lying down. He has gone back to the Supreme Court for a review of their own constitution, of their own judgment, which is allowed in the law, where he's telling them you made a mistake. He's going to plead to the same judges to change their mind. And the constitution is the only court in the land that is allowed to review its own decisions. It is not bound by their own decisions, so we would wait and see what that happens. But he has done something more. He has gone he has gone outside the country and he's saying, boss, look here, I have been unfairly treated. Please rein in on the Supreme Court of the Republic of Kenya. They have been unfair to me. He wants judges to recuse themselves. He wants specifically Chief Justice Martha Koome, and he's saying the Chief Justice made comments about his case, which she did. But I think, as I said, what boils down in this case is what do we want to do with this Chapter 6? Want to have a chapter in our constitution that forces us to have leaders with integrity, or don't we want to have it? Is a discussion, I think.
You know, I was reading the judgment, and one of the things they say that Chapter 6 is not in vain in our constitution, and it's not cosmetics. And that brings us to another issue, because remember, every leader has been talking about the way the Chapter 6 has been watered down. And for us, it takes us back to 2013. Remember when we had the president and his deputy elected when they were facing cases at the ICC. And from that time, there have been cases that have been brought before courts, and the aspirants and the candidates have been able to get away with it based on the interpretation of Chapter 6. So I think by the fact that Supreme Court for the first time has confronted this issue head on, then again it sends signal to various leaders who hold public office and even those who hold elective offices, appointive and elective, that you might try to run, but you might not get away with it. So I think it opens a new chapter for us to discuss about the impeachments that we've seen in the counties, both for the cabinets in the counties and for the governors. But on the flip side of it, it also opened something else. Remember from 2013 up to 2017, there was a mad rush to impeach governors and also impeach the CECs in the counties. And I, at one particular time, I think there was a feeling that the members of the county assemblies had gone rogue, because mostly they were holding the executive at ransom, mostly because of the financial pass in the counties. Mm-hmm. And at one particular time, that slowed down. So what do you see by this Chapter 6 being enhanced, if it will give the MCAs a weapon for some to go rogue and demand favors from the executive, promising and threatening them that they will be impeached? And that will also now kill the lucrativeness of the position of a governor, where you can see even in this elective time, most of the people have actually opted to go for governor because they think it is a more powerful position. Mm-hmm. It is moneyed. You're like the second in command after the president.
You're the CEO of a county.
Yes, you're flying the flag of Kenya. You're flying the flag of the country. You have
the
trappings
big man
of power.
Running billions.
Yes.
What I think, first of all, to just to go back a little, what you said about 2013.
Yes.
The onslaught against Chapter 6 of the Kenyan Constitution, if you ask some people, scholars, legal scholars, and these people that look at our legal jurisprudence, they will tell you that the onslaught against the Chapter 6 of the Constitution started in 2013 when there was that court case asking the High Court to declare whether or not the deputy president, President Uhuru Kenyatta and his deputy William Ruto, who were then having cases at the International Criminal Court over crimes against humanity, international crimes against humanity, whether on the face of the Chapter 6 of the Constitution and the Leadership and Integrity Act, they ought to have run. When the court cleared those two, having that hanging over their heads.
Yes.
Since 2013, 2017, and now 2022, we've seen cases in court where people were arguing using that very specific case that, look here, I've just been accused of whatever reason it is, if it is corruption, if it is any other criminal case.
Yes.
They have used that to defend themselves. Yeah. And now, as a country, we have gotten to a place where we've used that for all these years, for 10 years or so. And now we are faced with the question of, here is a man who has been declared unfit to hold public office because of his gross violation of the Constitution, abuse of office, and all these manner of
gross
things.
Misconduct.
Gross misconduct and all these manner of things. And so that whatever happens going forward, will be based on not only the Uhuru Ruto clearance in 2013, but also what happens with Mike Sonko. Because there has been arguments that the framers of the Constitution, it couldn't be their intention, it can really not be argued that it was their intention that all a man or a woman who has been, whose integrity has been put to question, has to do is to rush to court and get a pending appeal, and they should be cleared to run for office. Guys facing corruption, murder charges, hate speech, and all these things that really affect the fabric of our society.
And I think one of the arguments that they've always put, that the Constitution allows for the state officers, those who have been appointed in office, to step aside when they're having cases in court. But the same does not apply to elective positions. And that's why we have governors who are facing cases in court. We are having members of parliament who are facing cases in court. We are having members of the county assembly who are having active cases in court, but are still serving in their respective offices, because they're saying that the law allows them until they have exhausted their appeals. A good example, a classical example, is a Sirisia member of parliament who was actually
convicted.
Is out on bail and has been cleared to run. So now where does
and
it
might actually
it?
Win
and
again.
Might actually and win actually where win do we cut the so, two the other thing is that even when you're convicted, the law says that unless, if you're a member of parliament, you're convicted for more than 6 months, then you lose your seat. For a governor, it's 12 months for you to lose your seat. So because of that, we have not been able to enforce the law the way it's supposed to be.
Which is why the Supreme Court case against Sonko is very important. And that is why I think all of us are waiting for the long judgment where we hope the Supreme Court will trash out all these issues. What happens? They should set precedent and say, in terms of integrity,
yes,
really, what should be the threshold?
So that you bring honor to the
office. Yeah, what should be the threshold? What does it mean to say you have integrity and to seek leadership offices? What does it mean? What should it take for one to be elected to all these offices?
Yeah. And I think that will work because so many governors, I think we had over 10 impeachments from 2013 to now, spanning from the governors, the deputy governors, and we hope that going forward, those impeachments will have some meaning. Yeah. Now, just from that, let us shift a bit to now the debate that we're having today, the debate for the deputy president's position.
The big ones.
I can imagine how it will go down.
Oh, the big ones. We can't wait for that. The Nairobi governor's debate a few days ago set the pace.
Yes.
Set the pace really
and it's
well.
High. It can only go higher.
Yes. And today when we have those two tire debates, number one from the Roots party running mate and the Agano party running mate, the two women who will be facing each other during the first year debate to just be the deputy president of Kenya. And then those two, the Azimio presidential running mate Martha Karua and the Kenya Kwanza running mate Rigathi Gachagua in the second tier debate, having had more than 5% of the support in the opinion polls.
Yes.
I'm really looking forward to the Martha Karua Rigathi Gachagua. Rigathi Gachagua.
You know, it's coming at a time that there is a back and forth. Some of the leaders allied to Kenya Kwanza have indicated that maybe Rigathi Gachagua might not turn up. But the same thing we faced during the governor's debate where we thought Nairobi governor candidate Johnson Sakaja was going to give the debate a wide berth, only for him to turn in some minutes into the debate. So we are very hopeful to see these two top candidates, that is Rigathi Gachagua and Karua, take each other head on, because Kenyans want to know what they have for them.
Absolutely.
People want to know their posture. Do they put that posture of leadership? Do they understand the role of the office they're looking for? What is the agenda to Kenyans that make them tick to hold that office? I hope you're not going to have a theatric incident like what we had, the sideshows, but they are going to stick to the real issues, what Kenya Kwanza is offering and what Azimio on the other side is offering, that will drive the undecided voters to actually decide on who to vote for between the two.
Absolutely. You know, the seat of the deputy president is literally a breath away from the highest seat. Literally a breath away. Yeah. If the president drops dead today, those four people, one of those four people...
They should never be a vacuum.
One of those four people would automatically rise to that office and be our president. Which is why the debate today is going to be extremely important, not in just in the sense of where Kenyans should vote for and where Kenyans, the questions Kenyans have, but also on the basis of who are we going to put to have the second highest office in the land.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm really looking forward to the Rigathi and Martha Karua is that these two people are almost direct opposites of each other, if you will.
Yeah.
Rigathi Gachagua is a first-term MP. Martha Karua has been an MP for, 20 years? Four consecutive terms. Gichugu MP has been cabinet minister. She's been cabinet minister for justice, for water, for environment.
She's been a reformist. She's a party leader.
She's ran Second Liberation. Yes. Rigathi Gachagua, on the other hand, is by far among those who are considered for Deputy President William Ruto's running mates. The oldest. He is the most experienced in terms of what he's done as a businessman.
Yeah.
As as a mobilizer, mm-hmm. as all these things.
Yeah.
But the other thing you need to consider is that whatever happens, whoever wins between yeah. William Ruto and Raila Odinga,
yes.
these two people, Rigathi Gachagua and Martha Karua, mm. would be the faces of who becomes the Mount Kenya political supremo after
yes.
President Uhuru Kenyatta leaves. So yes. it is not for them, it is not just about ascending to that deputy presidency office. Mm. It is almost taking over a constituency
mm-hmm.
That has been held by President Uhuru Kenyatta for these 10 years and probably maybe a little longer before the other two, any of the other two takes over. Yeah.
You know, pundits and most Kenyans have talked about that the demeanor and the mien of these two, will they be able to be submissive to the power that be?
Mm-hmm.
Going by what we have seen between President Uhuru Kenyatta and his deputy William Ruto, will these people during that debates confirm that they will accept their position as number two,
exactly,
whoever assumes yeah. office? Because uh-huh. the drama that Kenyans have been treated to between the president and the deputy president, I don't think Kenyans will want a repeat of the same uh-huh. in the coming regime.
Uh-huh.
So I think these are some of the things that Kenya will be looking as they present themselves, as uh-huh. they discuss their manifesto. But again, they also come in with baggage. Both of them, people have talked about the good and bad, the bad side of them.
Uh-huh.
So they will also need to do serious homework and serious presentation to Kenyans that they have actually cleansed their past, and their past will not cloud their future.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, people are always defined by where they come from.
Exactly.
The issues people have talked about Rigathi, including his pending corruption cases. People have also talked about Karua during the 2007 elections
mm-hmm.
and the stand she took during the disputed presidential elections, and even her stand in the past, walking out of events when she, mm-hmm. she feels mm-hmm. It doesn't sit well with her beliefs. And we hope that going forward, she has now embraced the patience and grace to be able to be tolerant
uh-huh.
and to be able to understand that this position is just not them, but it outlives them. It's the country
mm-hmm.
they are serving. So these are some of the traits we'll be able to look during that debate. So it just goes not to the policies they'll be showing, but how best they can consider convince Kenyans that given the opportunity, they are the best mm. to be number two.
Absolutely, absolutely. We can't wait for that.
Today. We hope it.
We
will
hope
be
they
something.
All show up. We yes. hope they all show up. We hope they all show up in time.
Yes.
We hope they don't denigrate to personal attacks and yes. they only focus on policy. Mm-hmm. What yes. should happen? The constitution,
mm-hmm.
the high office that mm-hmm. they might occupy mm-hmm. after August 9th.
Mm-hmm.
And we hope they stick to the issues that Kenyans would want to.
We
hear.
Wish them all the best as they do their polite and respective submissions.
And we'll be here in the next episode to discuss whether or not they did that.
They did. I think as we wind up, I think we also need to bring in the issue of handing over and the transitional process of the Jubilee administration to the fifth, mm. whoever the fifth will be. Yes, because currently the cabinet secretaries are preparing the handover notes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we can just diverge into it and see exactly how that will happen. Already the president has appointed the assumption of office committee
mm-hmm.
For the new, the fifth, the president elects
yeah.
That we'll have after August polls, mm-hmm. that is on the 9th, if we don't have a rerun.
Absolutely. Yeah. These transitions, what the CSS are doing, the assumptions of office committee, mm. The parliamentary budgeting of the assumptions of office,
mm.
is for me what makes me proud
yes.
to be in such a democracy, that mm-hmm. we should be preparing for these things.
Mm-hmm.
It should be known by everybody by that everybody, President yes. Uhuru Kenyatta is leaving. There will be a new administration.
Mm-hmm.
And there should never be any doubt
yeah.
that this administration would hand over to the next
peacefully
peacefully
yes.
as it should and by the constitution
yes.
so that what the cabinet secretaries are going through now, preparing handover notes that will be presented to the president,
mm-hmm.
and then when the assumption of office committee takes over, when we have a president elect, mm-hmm. then those notes are the ones to be shared with the president elect. That would then help him or her,
mm-hmm.
Help him mm-hmm. now that there are only four male presidential, help him decide the priorities to take, how to choose cabinet secretaries and the high government officials, what decisions to make immediately he takes over, what government officials to retain from the previous administration. So that these notes are extremely important. It is an extremely important part of the transition process. And it is interesting to see it happening early enough and public enough for people to know.
maybe just to ask, you know, there are some of the cabinet secretaries who have actually aligned themselves to the various sides of the political camps. Now, in the event they are candidate, are they also preparing the handover notes? Or they will wait to see
if their candidate
is elected so that they can continue, because some of them have actually been assured to retain their positions. Yes.
I hope they are, because that is the whole essence of democracy anyway. Even if you're going... if you're hoping to be retained in the administration, there is no assurance that you would come to the same cabinet seat. So you would better prepare your handover notes for the next president, and then they would then decide where to put you. Which is why, and we talked about this before in a previous episode, which is why it is concerning sometimes to then see these massive appointments that happen just right at the tail end of the end of an administration, appointments that should be done by the next administration that would then say what are their priorities, what are the people they want to put in those places. While that might be a dent in the whole transition process, that should also be discussed going forward. How long to the elections should appointments still be done by outgoing CSS?
Because some might be revoked.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're preparing handover notes, yet on the other hand, you are appointing 20, 30 people to different parastatals. That for me doesn't sit well, and that needs to be discussed going forward. But the whole essence of the transition and the assumptions of office committees.
I agree with you that assumption of office committee is quite important, and that is why it's supposed to be in place earlier, so that it's supposed to prepare the new administration that is coming on board. And just if you key into the court ruling on retention of cabinet secretaries, remember there was a ruling against the cabinet secretaries who cross over with Uhuru to his second administration, that there was a requirement that they should have gone fresh vetting.
Mm-hmm.
So the same, I think, will apply to even the cabinet secretaries who will be retained to the next administration, that they need also to go through a vetting, a new appointment and a vetting process, and be able to articulate what they were able to do and what they are going to do. Now, again, with the handover notes, it will also help the exiting head of state to be able to prepare, I don't know if he'll do it, but to prepare an exit report where he can actually document his legacy projects and where he's has actually left, so that the new administration can either proceed with those projects, which to me I think it's the best way, because when you abandon a project halfway, then it hurts Kenyans, the taxpayers, because they've paid for it. Exactly. So that the new administration can see what do we modify and what do we just proceed with it the way it is, instead of launching new projects and abandoning the ones that have cost taxpayers billions of money.
Exactly. That transition, not just on the projects you've mentioned, but also on the CSS, is extremely important.
Mm.
Especially because, and I think this is the thing that most people don't realize or put in their heads well enough,
mm-hmm.
that the money you have used to put in projects, to put in whatever, is taxpayers' money. It is not your own money.
Yeah.
The money that the next administration will use to open other.
governors
coming, and then they would come to barazas and tell people, we didn't finish this and this because it was the previous governors. And they think that is a thing that people should celebrate. It is our own money. Mm-hmm. They should use it well. They should document what they have done, what they have not done, what they would like done, and it is upon the next administration to then decide how to do it and how fast to go about it.
It's going to be quite an interesting transition. Remember, this is the first time we are having a transition where we are having a president under the 2010 constitution handing to another person under the same constitution.
Absolutely.
I think this is where we leave it.
It's been an interesting conversation, surprisingly.
Yes,
with the two gentlemen away.
I think they should stay away. They should stay away.
They should stay away a little longer.
Allow us to have our field day.